Behind the Bite podcast is part of a network of podcasts that are good for the world. Check out podcasts like the Full of Shift podcast, After the First Marriage podcast, and Eating Recovery Academy over at practiceofthepractice.com/network. Welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. This podcast is about the real life struggles women face with food, body image, and weight. We're here to help heal, inspire, and create better, healthier lives. Welcome. Hello, everyone. So, as you know, one of the main reasons I started this podcast was because I was thinking back to when I was in the thick of my own struggles. And, you know, with my eating disorder and hating my body, I really think it would have been helpful to have heard other people talk about what they were going through, just to know I wasn't alone. Or maybe just to at least hear the right information instead of being fed myths and thinking that what I was reading or hearing or believing was true and correct. So I think that would have helped me know that what I was doing was hurting me and perhaps even helped me to seek out treatment sooner. Or at least have hoped that I could get better if I had heard that other people had stopped doing what I was. I know for sure that one thing that went hand in hand with my eating disorder and body image was also having this diagnosis of polycystic ovarian syndrome, or PCOS. For years, I struggled with acne, weight, body hair, migraines, just all sorts of things that were going on in my body. And I heard all sorts of horrible things from doctors and nurses that left me really just honestly confused, feeling ashamed and frightened. And I feared not being able to have children. So if only I could have known other women who had gone through what I was or had this diagnosis, or just heard other women who were scared about their own fertility, I think it would have helped me way back then, which is why I felt discussing this today is really important, and why I'm also excited to have someone here as a guest today to talk about their own journey with their eating disorder and also having a diagnosis of PCOS. Julie is a 40-year-old married woman who struggled most of her life with perfectionism, OCD, anxiety, and anorexia nervosa. She now has 2 kids after going through years of battling PCOS. Julie, it is an honor to have you here to share your story. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So as I said, you and I have a lot in common, but you know, with the long history with eating disorder and body image issues and a diagnosis of PCOS and fertility issues, I know everyone, you know, we may have similar struggles that we have gone through, but you have your own story and I'm just really honored that you're here to share it. So I don't know if there's a specific place you want to start, so I'm going to leave that up to you. So,
well, thank you. So I started having disordered thoughts and with my eating disorder as a young child, as young as 4. And I would say that, you know, I was always a thinner child and I always kind of had like rules and rituals around food. And as I continued to age, I noticed that I started getting fatigued and started having migraines and started growing hair in places where it shouldn't be. I also noticed that I started having like dark patches on my skin. I noticed that like my body was changing in ways that it shouldn't, even though that these rules and rituals and these restrictions I was placing on myself with food were still in place. So I also was developing insomnia at night. I was having anxiety and I was developing some weight gain as well, even though I was an athlete. So I wasn't really understanding like kind of what was going on with my body. And at this point, I would say I was around 10 years old. I convinced my grandmother to help me join a gym at Linda Evans. And it was an all-women's gym. So I would go to the gym to try to help control this weight gain that was happening. And in my mind, I wasn't understanding like, why is my body gaining weight when I was doing everything right in my brain. I was pretty much restricting my food intake. I was making sure that I, in my mind, was eating the right good foods. I wasn't eating like fast food. I wasn't drinking soda. I wasn't eating sugar. So I was going to this gym and I would spend, you know, at first an hour a day in the gym. And then eventually I would go 2 hours in the gym. And eventually it would be 3 hours in the gym. But the weight gain just kept happening.
So from it, so you were really young, you said, when you started having these thoughts. So how young were you when you started to have thoughts about food and your body before? I mean, 10 years old is young enough to think about going to the gym, but how young were you when you started having thoughts about like even what you were eating or thoughts about your body?
I was really, really young. I mean, I remember when I was like 4 years old that I had a divided plate and everything had to be separate. And so if my food would touch, I had this rule in my mind that I couldn't eat the food. So, and then I had a rule about like, I had to eat my food in a certain order. And if I didn't eat the food in a certain order, I just couldn't eat. So I developed these rules and these rituals at a very young age. And I developed this good list and this bad list at a very young age to try to control things. So, I just remember at a very young age that I already started these habits. And as I continued to age, and especially if I wasn't staying thin and this weight gain was happening, those habits got worse and the restrictions got worse and the exercise got worse.
Now, were these behaviors you saw from anyone else in your family at family meals? Were other people separating out their foods or not having certain foods touch, or was this just you?
No, it was just me. My parents actually thought that it was just a phase. They thought I would grow out of it. I was the only person in my family that had a divided plate. So I actually had a sibling who was in college, and I remember, you know, her boyfriend jokingly opening the cabinet and saying, you know, do you have a child that lives here? Because she had a divided plate at her dorm room for me, because I still, you know, at 18 years old had a divided plate because I had to separate my food. I couldn't have my food touch. That was, you know, still a ritual and a rule for me. If my food touched, I can't eat it. So that kind of just stuck.
So interesting though, even at, like you're saying, at a very young age, you started to categorize food in terms of like good, bad, healthy, this, that. And, you know, as I'm thinking about this, I'm wondering where that even started from for you in terms of, like, is it something you recall ever hearing people talking about? Like, this is this kind of food, that's this kind of food. Like, I'm wondering if you can recall back and think, gosh, where did that even come from for you?
I think that everybody in my family, you know, nobody in my family said like, oh, this is not healthy for you to eat. This is unhealthy for you to eat. So I don't recall any of that. I don't ever recall, you know, nobody in my family was like ever on like a diet. So that wasn't really that big of an issue. I do have a sibling who was, you know, didn't like to eat meat. So, you know, she chose to be a vegetarian. So, you know, she went ahead and went that route, which is fine. But it was nothing like, okay, you can't have that food because that's bad for you. Or, these were just things that I made up in my own mind. Like, you know, if you eat this food, it's bad for you. So, and it could be, you know, like simple as like a piece of fruit. I labeled some fruits as a bad food because I'm like, it's sugar. It's bad for me. I can't have it.
Okay. So then as you're talking, you're getting up towards 10 years old and you're noticing these, as you mentioned, these body changes that probably, it sounds like, felt very out of control for you, like you couldn't stop them. And even the concept at 10 years old of saying, I want to go to the gym, like that is a very unusual thought for a 10-year-old. I'm wondering why you even had that in mind, like, oh gosh, my body's doing this, let me go to the gym.
Yeah, I thought that, okay, I need more exercise. Like I'm gaining this weight and it's just not staying in control. You know, I was an athlete, so I was getting, you know, as a, I would say a normal healthy person would say, you're getting plenty of exercise. You know, you're doing PE at school. You're getting exercise outside the home because you're an athlete. And, but it just wasn't enough for me. I needed more exercise in my mind. Like my ed thoughts were saying, you need more exercise. You are not doing enough. So clearly we need to get you inside that gym. So I started off at the hour mark wasn't doing enough. I went to the 2-hour mark because it wasn't making a dent in my scale. And my scale was my friend. So my friend was telling me, like, if I got on the scale, you know, and I got on the scale and weighed myself quite a bit of times a day. So, you know, that determined my mood. So if the scale went down, then that also controlled how many times I was going to go to that gym that day and for how many hours. So that was kind of the mark of, you know, spinning that part of my eating disorder a little bit more out of control. But then again, my weight, it just kept creeping up, and I didn't understand, like, what is going on. And I was just having all these other symptoms. But again, I had no clue what was happening here. And I felt like I was suffering internally alone, you know, because now I'm, you know, 12 years old, 13 years old, the weight just keeps piling on. And here I am restricting more, exercising more. And I still don't know what is going on. So it's 1994. I'm 14 years old. I'm in the doctor's office. And finally, the doctor is intrigued by me. It's like, something's just not right. And they finally decide to have me seen by an endocrinologist and figure out what is happening here.
Now I'm actually curious about that too. So was anybody in your life aware of all of these behaviors? Did anyone kind of go, gosh, you know, Julie's spending all these hours at the gym, and or anybody witnessing, hey, you're not eating as much? Like, was anybody asking you about these things or witnessing your behaviors or how much time you were spending at the gym? You're really young, so I'm just curious if, like, were you hiding these behaviors? What was going on?
No, I mean, I had parents that worked, so it was real easily, like, for me to kind of, you know, just do enough to get by. You know, my dad worked the swing shift, and my mom worked as a, you know, at a school, so, you know, the hours that I was doing these things, you know, it just didn't seem out of norm. So, you know, when I was going to the gym, I would go and be like, oh, I'm going to go do this class. And I'm going to, you know, I made it all about me being an athlete, because playing my sport was the world to me. So I said, I'm going here so I can work on me being stronger. And I'm going to work on me, you know, perfecting my craft. And, you know, I told whatever I needed to tell to, you know, feed my eating disorder. And my parents bought it.
Now, were you aware that you were engaged in an eating disorder at this time?
I had no clue.
You just thought this was totally normal.
Yeah, I thought it was totally normal. I mean, well into my 20s, I thought it was normal. I was in major denial. I thought that this is just how things work, and this is how I function, and I function best doing this way.
So what got you finally to go into the doctor who was saying, let me get you into this endocrinologist? Was it just like a normal checkup, or what was going on?
I was actually at the doctor by accident. My sibling was there for her, like, regular checkup, and I was just in the waiting room, and that's when the doctor pulled me in and started asking me questions about me. And so I kind of just got pulled in by default, actually, and then started asking me all questions about like my history and asking me, you know, like, have you started your cycle? And I'm like, no, like, why would I want to do that? You know, I'm an athlete. Of course not. And I, you know, I'm 14 years old. I'm like, I got plenty of time for that. And, so he's like, you know, that's not really normal and we need to have you checked out. So, I got sent to an endocrinologist, and that's when all the work started. I had to have lab work done. I had to have an ultrasound done, like on my ovaries. They took measurements of my waist. They did my height and my weight. They, you know, scanned my body for like hair growth and where hair should not be growing, you know. They checked for acne, skin tags. They checked, you know, asked about my mood and, you know, asked, do you suffer from depression? Do you suffer from anxiety? And of course, I'm like, of course I don't. You know, I'm 14. I'm not going to tell them any of that. They asked if I had pelvic pain, and I suffered from migraines, so that was an issue. I had sleep problems. I was also checked for sleep apnea because I guess my parents said that I stopped breathing at night, so I had to have that checked. I had major fatigue because I wasn't sleeping, so based off of all these labs I had done and everything that, you know, they checked on me and with, you know, the ultrasounds and everything, they came back to me and said, you know, congratulations, you have PCOS. And I'm like, great, what is that? And I just remember my endocrinologist telling me like, you know, I'm really sorry to tell you, but you just will never have kids. And I said, well, that's great. I don't want them anyways.
Oh my goodness. You were how old?
I was 14.
And that's what you were told?
Yes.
14 years old and that's what you're told. My goodness. Like, did that even register in your mind, like what that even meant? Or
I was just more like, okay, well, kids, not a big deal. I'm like, what are we going to do about the weight gain? You know, because that was my big issue. Like, I felt like I was completely out of my own body. And I felt like I was a science project. Like, the way that they were measuring me, the way that they were poking at me, the way that they were exposing my body, I didn't like it. So I was told, you know, I had high cholesterol, and my little hint of healthy mind is like, well, how can that be? I like restrict myself to like everything. So then my eating disorder is like, oh, you need to restrict some more. Like, there goes the pasta, there goes the rice. And so I started removing even more foods. Like, I came up with even more of like a good list and bad list. So, bread out, you know, like carbohydrates, anything with the word carbohydrate in it, broccoli out, you know? So the food list got even smaller and smaller because I'm like, oh, I have this PCOS stuff now. He told me I need to lose weight. He told me I had to watch my diet. Mm. So it just got even more out of control.
And nobody had been asking you about what you were eating or how much you were exercising at that point?
I was asked, you know, do I exercise? The question was yes. So at this point, you know, the healthcare wasn't saying, well, how much are you exercising? It was just, do you exercise? Yes. I'm an athlete. Of course I exercise. I go to the gym too. So in their mind was, okay, great. You know, I was told I needed to lose weight. So that gave my eating disorder a thumbs up, like, good. You know, you got the clear that you need to exercise some more. So my eating disorder just loved it. And at this point, you know, I went on metformin and I went on birth control to try to start like a cycle, which I actually didn't officially get my cycle till I was 22 years old. And even then it was, you know, on again, off again. And they gave me cream to try to help control the hair growth, because I would grow hair like on my face. And they tried to give me a medication, which that was really bad side effects. So I just refused to take it. And I just continued to struggle with like this weight, because this weight just would not come off no matter what I tried to do. So in my brain, I said, okay, well, I need to figure out like the best combination of restricting and exercise combo to try to get this tire around my waist gone, because this isn't going to work. So eventually, what happened is when I went back to my endocrinologist for my like annual checkup, I was telling him that, you know, I'm like, hey, you know, I'm a little older now. And I said, I'm kind of going to the gym like 6 hours just to try to lose like 5 pounds. And he's like, well, you know, sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. And I was a little surprised by that, but I was like, okay, green light. I'll just continue exercising that much. And so I did. And, you know, and honestly, I'm not shocked by some of these healthcare providers, because more recently I had a primary care doctor who clearly knew that I have an eating disorder. And she even made the comment to me that, you know, I didn't look like I have PCOS and I spit out, well, I have an eating disorder. And so, you know, my brain is like, why would you say that to her? You know? And, but my EDPA is like, oh yes, like good job. Like now you need to go restrict some more, you know? It's just crazy. Like some of the clinicians, that they just need to be more educated on when somebody has an eating disorder in their file, that they should probably, you know, be more educated on what they should say and what they should not say.
Oh, absolutely. The things that, you know, as I was told so many horrible things every time I would go to the doctor, there's so much ignorance about PCOS and eating disorders. Exactly. So when I'm hearing you say these things, I'm just going, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry you heard these things. This feeds Ed's voice, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, and my, you know, I had my endocrinologist like suggest like even certain diets, you know, because the healthcare provider, what I was blown away with is that they would have discounts for like Weight Watchers, and they would have discounts for certain programs. And so he'd be like, well, you know, you can get a discount for using Weight Watchers. You should sign up for that. And I said, oh, great idea. So, you know, I looked at doing Weight Watchers, and then I'm like, no, that's not good enough like program for my eating disorder. So I ended up finding a doctor outside of my healthcare, and where, you know, she was giving me like Phentermine pills, you know, because that was going to feed my eating disorder better and help me achieve my goal, you know, that I wanted. Because, you know, my endocrinologist said I needed to lose weight. And because that's what my eating disorder heard, like, oh, you need to lose weight. And with my PCOS, I was so out of control with my body. I had no control over my body, and I did not like that. So I did what I had to do to feel like I was still in control.
Versus getting education about, hey, this is the diagnosis you have. This is how you can expect your body to be. This is, you know, a normal trajectory. Instead of normalizing things, it's more this combative, like, hey, you need to look like this, or you need to do this in order to fit into some mold. It's, you know, it is pathologizing and shaming, and you feel out of control versus you're trying to control something that actually doesn't need to be controlled. This is just what your body's doing because of this illness. And it's so crazy making, right?
Right. Exactly.
And so it just sounds like you were just in this chaos and nobody was really helping you. So I'm wondering, like, where did you go from here? Because it sounds like your 20s was, your early 20s at least, you were just in the muck of your eating disorder and trying to manage this PCOS, but that was triggering your eating disorder. So where did you go from here? It just sounds like, you know, going into your mid-20s, what happened?
Right. So I continued to spiral really bad. And it took me to, it got to the point where, you know, I ended up having like another surgery. I had my tonsils removed. And I mean, I used like every single excuse I could. So like after I had my tonsils removed, I, you know, could not eat certain foods, but then I played that out so long that I completely stopped eating. And I had a family member call me out on it and say that, hey, you know, I know what you're doing. And, instead of getting help, I relocated to a different part of California to stay in a relationship with my eating disorder instead of getting help, to the point, eventually my eating disorder took over me and, where I just couldn't function. So my high functioning eating disorder just wasn't working for me anymore. And I had no choice but to seek help. And I came back to Northern California and went to see my primary care doctor and went and checked myself into, you know, an intense outpatient program. And then continued my treatment, which I continue.
So was that something your primary care doctor suggested, or was that something that your body just kind of shut down and like you had no choice?
My body just kind of shut down, and she, because I was an adult at the time, I was 26, and she gave me a choice. So she said that, you know, like we could do the feeding tube or you can go into a program. And my eating disorder is like, oh, there's no feeding tube allowed. Like, we're going to go with this option B, you know, because I'm like, oh, I can still, you know, engage in my eating disorder. I mean, because that's how sick I was. And so I chose option B and went into the program. And I stayed in the program for 4 months and then came out of the program, and then went back into the program and then came out. And then, and at the time when I went into the program, I met my now husband, and then that's when, you know, we ended up getting married, and then we decided like, okay, we want to have kids. So, we started going down that route and having to go through infertility treatments and everything, knowing that, you know, I have PCOS, and also because I was still like in recovery and trying to stay on the path and still having issues with my eating disorder, we were trying to walk that line as well.
So how was that? So you meet your now husband and you start talking about, okay, let's, you know, we want to have children. So was it in the back of your mind that, hey, I was told I can't? Like, what was that like for you to have those discussions with him?
I told him that, you know, I wanted to have kids, and, you know, like expand our family because he already had a child. And so I wanted to expand our family. And so I told him, like, you know, I have this condition called PCOS, and I was told I couldn't have kids. And so I said, we're going to have to go through this process, and it may happen, it may not. Like, I don't really know. So as soon as we got married, we literally started that process that same month that we got married, because I didn't know how long it would take. I didn't know if it'd take years. I didn't know if it'd take months, and everything. So he was game for it and willing to try. And so we met with the infertility specialist, and started going through that process of having to start doing all the testing. And, I mean, we already knew that I had the PCOS, so that wasn't that big of a deal, but you know, I had to like take the shots, and I had to go take all the medications and all that, which was difficult on my body and not fun.
I don't know about you, but I remember very clearly being told twice, like, you will not be able to have children. One with the eating disorder diagnosis. And I remember that it was such a horrible thing to be told, like, okay, well, you know, you've ruined your body. And then secondly, with the PCOS, being told like, well, good luck having kids. Like, this is going to be damn near impossible. And just remember thinking how horrible that is. And for anyone out there listening who's ever been told either with the diagnosis of an eating disorder, like your chances of fertility are slim to none, or just blatantly outright, you won't be able to have children, or someone with the diagnosis of PCOS out there listening who's thinking, I can't have children, or scared they can't. I want you to really listen to what Julie and I are saying today, because that's one of the main reasons I wanted to bring this podcast out today, is because I want you to breathe for a minute and go, okay, that's whatever you've been told. If you've been told any of those things or believing any of those things, just know right now, like, that's absolutely not true. And I really hate if that message is given to anybody, because that's horrible, that fear. And I, you know, I was asking about how you discuss that with your husband, because I know a lot of women are scared to have those discussions with potential partners, or think, oh gosh, I can't date, or I can't get married, or to someone who wants to have kids because I can't. And that's not the case. So I want you to more discuss, you know, your own trajectory and how you got to having a family with your husband, because, and I want to share with everybody out there, I do have two beautiful children. So that's absolutely not the case for any of you wondering, like, you can have kids. So, but you know, I want to kind of hear more of how you moved forward with that yourself. So,
right. But
thank you for sharing this.
Right. I mean, for us, my husband's very supportive, and he's real easy to talk to, and he kind of is like my calming and very, very positive, because I'm always the negative mindset over here, and I'm always the one like, it's not going to work. So, you know, as we went through the process, my infertility doctor was really great. She explained everything that was going to happen. She explained our chances. She explained like the chances of us, you know, like having multiples, especially because multiples run on both sides of our family. She explained like what that would be like if we had multiples. She explained that we, you know, I was high risk. So she explained like what that would look like for me to carry a child, to, you know, being high risk in general, and explain to my husband like what the, you know, the risk factors were just for me to get pregnant. So we made that decision together as husband and wife to proceed. So we went ahead and proceeded along, and you know, thankfully we were able to get pregnant with the methods that the infertility treatments that we're able to do. You know, it took us a couple tries to get there. But you know, I was able to get pregnant, and, after a couple tries, and, you know, had a son. And then, I ended up having a miscarriage in between my son and my daughter, but we ended up having two kids. So it's possible, you know, with PCOS you can. And I think like nowadays that there's so much more information now about PCOS and like how you can treat it, and than there was back, you know, in the 90s when, you know, I was first diagnosed with it and everything. So I think there's a lot more information out there than you know, I had back when I was, you know, 14. So I think there's a lot more hope out there about that.
And thank you for sharing that. I know that must be really hard to have gone through a miscarriage. And you know, for anyone out there listening, don't please equate that with having PCOS. It's a devastating thing for any woman to have gone through. So again, thank you for being open about all of that, because I know it's very difficult for going through infertility, but then also losing a child like that. So thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think things that sometimes people don't talk about is like what it's like to be pregnant when you have an eating disorder. And that's something that like I didn't expect, because I thought like, you know, with my first pregnancy, you know, that was my miracle baby. And I thought like, this is what I always wanted. But what I didn't expect to happen was, you know, you get through like that first trimester, and then all of a sudden you start to see your baby growing. And I was still kind of newer out of my recovery, but I was still struggling. And I wasn't doing really well with the weight gain. Like I couldn't handle it. So, I ended up having to be honest with my OB, like, hey, I have an eating disorder, like, because she was on me about not gaining weight. And she was trying to tell me like, hey, you know, you should be gaining weight at this point. Like you're not gaining any weight. And I said, okay, well, I'll try. And then my next appointment, I would see her. She's like, you're still not gaining weight. And I said, well, I'm trying. You know, I was just really sick with my first pregnancy. And so I'd blame it on that. I'm like, well, I was really sick. I don't feel well, which, you know, there's a lot of truth to that too. So I had to be proactive, and I was still seeing my therapist. So I made a deal. Like, I made sure that I did my individual counseling weekly with her. I went to a weekly support group, and I ended up doing like classes for pregnancy, so I can like learn that, you know, the baby needs certain things and how much the baby weighs. So like I could try to convince my ed thoughts to like silence, and everything. So it kind of would, you know, weigh that so I could sustain my pregnancy. I also would, because I worked like close to where my healthcare provider was, it was kind of like a trick on my mind. So I would purposely go and have lunch with friends from work to make sure that I was eating my lunch. And I would go and get coffee in the morning to make sure that I could also get breakfast. So there were like things that I was doing to make sure that I was getting that food in. I also met with like a nutrition outside my healthcare, from somebody that, you know, through my clinician that I trusted, to make sure that, you know, I could get on a meal plan to feed my body to keep my baby growing. And I also put like a picture of my ultrasound on the fridge. So every time I walked by the fridge at night at home, it reminded me like, okay, you need to eat dinner, because otherwise I'd forget. Like my hunger cues were so off that I would forget. So there were like things that I needed to do while I was pregnant to make sure that I stayed on track, because it was really hard. And, you know, like when I would go to the OB appointment, you know, and they have to weigh you, I just turn around and be like, don't tell me, because the, you know, knowing how much I would weigh would just set me off.
Well, like you were really proactive and really diligent about making sure you took care of yourself and your baby and did things to not get triggered. So like that was a really healthy thing for you emotionally and physically for you and the baby. So
yeah,
really good things to think about.
Yeah. I think like having, you know, like if you're pregnant and you have an eating disorder, I think just having like a good support staff is really important.
And so now, I mean, congratulations, you have two children, and, you know, now as you're looking back and you know, it's been some time, where would you mind sharing like where you're at now with everything and in terms of like your eating disorder and, you know, body image? Like, do you feel like you still have some ways to go, or do you feel like you've come like such a long way? Do you still get triggered?
So I would say I definitely still get triggered. I would say that I'm in partial remission, because I still have major control issues. I think it's just the way that I deal with my stress. And I try to fight it. But sometimes those thoughts just overpower me. And so I just make sure that I stay up on my therapy and my treatment, and I'm just honest about where I'm at with my treatment and with my thoughts. So I figure as long as I don't keep it a secret, then those eating disorder thoughts won't become more powerful.
Wonderful. Well, Julie, I really appreciate you sharing this whole journey that you've been through, and I'm really grateful for everything that you've opened up to about all this, because I know most people don't talk about all of this, and it's such a painful experience for a lot of it. And, you know, as we're getting close to the end here, I don't know if there's any one last big piece of advice or anything you want to share with everybody.
I would just say that, you know, sometimes with like healthcare providers, is there's going to be some that are just not educated, and sometimes you just kind of have to block out the noise. And then there are some healthcare providers that they are educated, and they will tell you that, like, when they're, you know, talking to you about like how to treat you, and they might not even be educated, you know, they might not even be talking to you about like eating disorder. It could be like something related to like, you know, your back or something. And they might say, but knowing that you have a history of an eating disorder, they might just say, but this doesn't apply to you. This isn't for you specifically. Like, and I just hope that more education gets out to healthcare providers about eating disorders, because I think that it really can impact somebody's recovery, or somebody who's in recovery, whether, you know, they're going to, you know, have ED thoughts overpower them or not. So I think that is really important for healthcare providers to be more mindful of.
Very well said. All right. Well, all right, everyone. Thank you as always for being here, and thank you for listening. And as always, I hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did, you can rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. You can also go to my website at behindthebitepodcast.com, where you can get my free 9-week email course and start your journey to making peace with your struggles with food and your body. Until next time, to your health, everyone.
This podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regards to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither the host, the publisher, or the guest are rendering legal, accounting, clinical, or any other professional information. If you want a professional, you should find one.